Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, and today we're diving deep into one of the most fundamental aspects of health that affect literally everything in your body, your gut health. Over the past few months, I've had the incredible opportunity to interview some of the leading experts in gut health and functional nutrition. For example, Lindsay Little or Liz Roman, also known as the Poop Queen, Dominic Cuza from Revive, Trey Bruffy, who emphasizes keeping health simple, and Dane Anderson, who specializes in tackling inflammation through gut health. What's fascinating is that every single expert I've spoken to, regardless of their primary specialty, eventually comes back to gut health as the foundation of overall wellness. Whether we're talking about hormones, weight management, skin health, mood regulation, or even building muscle, it all starts in the gut. So today, I want to share with you the most valuable insights I've gathered from these conversations. We'll cover everything from understanding what healthy digestion actually looks like to practical strategies for healing your gut and creating a lasting change. Whether you're dealing with chronic digestive issues, unexplained symptoms that doctors can't really seem to figure out, or you simply want to optimize your health from the ground up, this guide will give you the tools you need to transform your gut health and overall well-being. So let's start with the basics. When we talk about gut health, we're primarily referring to your large intestine or colon, where trillions of microbes live and work to support your health. As Lindsay Little explained, this is where the largest concentration of bacteria resides and where the biggest opportunities for both problems and solutions exist. So your gut is far more than just a digestive system. It's home to about 70% of your immune system. It produces approximately 90% of your serotonin, so your feel-good neurotransmitter, and it houses what researchers call your second brain due to the extensive network of neurons lining your digestive tract. Dominic Cuza emphasized something crucial that many people don't realize. Your gut bacteria are absolutely essential for DNA replication. Without adequate gut health, your body literally cannot repair and regenerate tissues properly. So that means that gut health affects everything from muscle recovery after workouts to skin healing to cognitive function and so on. And here's what's really fascinating. Your gut bacteria actually communicate with your brain through what's called the gut-brain axis. This explains why you might feel anxious when your stomach is upset or why stress can immediately affect your digestion. It's not just in your head. There's a real physical connection between your gut and your brain. The gut microbiome is like a fingerprint. It's unique to you and constantly changing based on what you eat, how you sleep, your stress levels, medications you take, and even the people you're with. So, one of the most important things Lindsay Little taught me is that we need to start paying attention to our body's daily report card, our bowel movements. I know this might seem uncomfortable to discuss, but as Liz Roman said, we're literally flushing valuable health data down the toilet every day. So, let's look at it. And here's what healthy digestion should look like. In terms of frequency, you should be having at least one complete bowel movement per day. Some people go 2 to 3 times daily, which can also be normal. In terms of consistency, we can use something called the Bristol stool chart as a reference. So you want to aim for a type 4, a well-formed, smooth, and easy to pass type of stool. It should be roughly S-shaped. In terms of ease, you shouldn't have to strain or spend more than a few minutes on the toilet. A healthy bowel movement should happen relatively quickly and easily. When it comes to timing, I'm kind of alluded to that. Ideally, you'll have the urge to go within the first hour of waking. Your colon naturally cleanses between 5 and 7 a.m., but I think there is a lot more flexibility to this than the research might indicate. Again, Lindsay Little emphasized that while some bloating is normal from time to time, when it's disrupting your life, making you avoid social situations, or preventing you from exercising comfortably, that's your body sending up a red flag. Liz Roman then pointed out something very crucial. Many people think their digestive issues are normal because they've been experiencing them for so long. But just because something is your normal doesn't mean it's optimal. So, what makes gut health so fundamental, or what makes gut health so fundamental, is how it connects to virtually every other aspect of health, as I've already said. Let me break it down in terms of crucial connections. Your hormonal balance, for instance. Dane Anderson explained that all health issues, in his opinion, start with the gut. Your gut bacteria help metabolize hormones, particularly estrogen, through what's called the estrobilome. When your gut health is compromised, you might experience estrogen dominant symptoms, PMS, difficulty losing weight, mood swings, and sleep disturbances. William Grosjean, another expert I interviewed, emphasized that gut health is crucial for proper detoxification, and if you're not having regular bowel movement, hormones that should be eliminated get reabsorbed into your system, creating a cycle of hormonal imbalances. Now, when it comes to weight management and metabolism, Trey Bruffy explained to us that gut health directly impacts your food cravings and metabolism. The bacteria in your gut actually influence what you crave. If you're eating a lot of processed foods, for instance, you'll develop more bacteria that thrive on sugar and refined carbs, and these bacteria will literally send signals to your brain to crave more of these foods. So if you have those cravings, that could be a sign that there's something wrong with your gut health, and you need to kind of cut that cycle. Then Dominic Scusa pointed out that gut health affects nutrient absorption. You might be eating a perfect diet, but if your gut isn't functioning properly, you're not actually absorbing and utilizing those nutrients effectively. There's another connection, and that is between the immune function and inflammation. Since 70% of your immune system is housed in your gut, digestive health directly impacts your ability to fight off infections and manage inflammation throughout your body. Dane Anderson explained that chronic gut issues create systemic inflammation, which can manifest as joint pain, skin problems, brain fog, chronic fatigue, autoimmune conditions, and more. And the last connection I want to mention here is to mental health and mood. So, with 90% of serotonin produced in the gut, it's no surprise that digestive issues or digestive health significantly impacts mood and mental well-being. Many people who address their gut health notice improvements in anxiety, in depression, and overall mood stability. Every expert I've interviewed has emphasized the crucial connection between stress and gut health as well. So Trey Bruffy, for instance, he particularly highlighted how chronic stress is one of the biggest drivers of digestive dysfunction. Here is what happens when you're stressed. Your body diverts energy away from digestion. Stress can alter gut mobility, leading to diarrhea or constipation in most cases. Chronic stress then promotes inflammation throughout the body, and stress hormones can negatively impact the balance of gut bacteria in your gut. Dane Anderson then emphasized that many people don't realize how stressed they actually are. He uses the analogy of a needle being put in your back every hour. At first, it hurts, but eventually you become desensitized to it. And the same thing sort of happens with chronic stress, unfortunately. And again, like chronic, Trey Bruffy recommends that having clients put a check mark on paper every time something stressful happens throughout the day could be a good strategy to even just bring awareness to that. Most people are shocked to discover that they're experiencing stress responses 50 to 100 plus times per day from things like traffic, work emails, or just rushing around. Now let's look into the practical strategies for healing and optimizing your gut health, starting with nutrition. Let's start with the power of fiber diversity. Lindsay Little emphasized that fiber diversity is more important than just the total amount of fiber you're eating. She recommends counting the number of different plant foods you eat each week rather than obsessing over grams of fiber. The goal is to eat 30 plus different plant foods per week. So that could be vegetables, of course, of all colors, fruits, nuts, seeds, legumes, herbs, spices, and whole grains. Each different plant food contains a unique fiber that feed different bacteria in your gut. So a practical tip would be, instead of eating the same blueberries every day, rotate between the various berries throughout the week, or even just purchase a berry mixture. Instead of always having spinach, you could rotate between different leafy greens, or again, like buy the mixed pack of the frozen vegetables instead of just a single vegetable pack. Another point is a gradual fiber increase. Both Lindsay Little and Liz Roman emphasized the importance of increasing fiber gradually together with hydration. So if you're currently eating very little fiber, jumping to 40 plus grams per day will likely cause significant digestive issues. Instead, increase by 5 to 7 grams every 4 to 5 days. Pay attention to how your body responds and ensure you're drinking adequate water as you increase fiber. Another point pertains to hydration and fiber balance. I guess kind of touched on this right now. So Liz Roman stressed that fiber and hydration always need to go hand in hand. Increasing fiber without adequate water can actually worsen constipation. We want to aim for at least half of our body weight in ounces per water daily, more if you're active, and gradual increases if you're not used to drinking much water. Of course, we can count things like herbal teas, the water that we're using in our protein shake, or in soups, towards that as well. Now, when it comes to foods that specifically support gut health, Dominic Cusa shared several foods that have specific gut healing properties. Bone broth provides collagen and amino acids that support gut lining integrity. Grass-fed ghee or butter contains butyrate, which is like gas for gut lining, and fermented foods like yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut, and kimchi provide beneficial bacteria, also known as probiotics. But prebiotic foods like garlic, onions, asparagus, bananas feed these beneficial bacteria, the probiotics you have. And anti-inflammatory foods include fatty fish, turmeric, ginger, leafy greens, and berries. So those would all be very beneficial. Now, foods that we want to limit, while individual tolerance obviously varies, certain foods commonly cause a little bit of digestive issues. So highly processed foods, excessive sugar, artificial sweeteners can cause a bit of bloating, excessive alcohol, and foods you're just personally sensitive to. So that kind of requires a little bit more digging. Beyond what you eat, how you eat is also super crucial for health. Liz Roman emphasized the importance of eating hygiene. Sit down for meals. Eating while standing, walking, or driving puts your body in a stress state that impairs digestion. Take 3 to 5 deep breaths before eating could be a good habit to get into. This activates your parasympathetic nervous system and prepares your body for digestion. We also want to make sure we're chewing thoroughly. So aiming for food to be nearly liquid while swallowing, and I will be honest, this is not something that comes easy to me. Sometimes I've actually set myself like a count goal. Let's just say like I want to make sure I'm chewing this 10 times before I swallow, but yeah, it's certainly not easy. But this starts the digestive process and reduces the burden on your stomach. And we also want to eat without distraction as best as possible. Again, this is tricky, but getting into the habit of putting our phones away, turning off the TV, and really just like practicing mindfulness while we're eating can be so valuable. So, not rushing if possible and allowing adequate time for meals rather than just wolfing down your food. Trey Ruffy generally recommends 3 to 4 regular meals rather than constant grazing and allowing 3 to 4 hours between meals. However, of course, there is a lot of variance to that. We don't want to drink large amounts of fluid with the meals, and eating our largest meal more when we're most relaxed is also our when we're most relaxed is also recommended. Contrary to popular advice about taking walks immediately after eating, several experts recommend sitting quietly for 10 to 15 minutes after a meal to allow for initial digestion to begin, and then taking a gentle walk a few minutes. I personally don't know the evidence behind this. If I'm honest, I kind of disagree with that because everything that I have seen is more in the sense of you want to move right after the meal to help with blood sugar regulation so that you're not falling asleep, or that you're activating that sympathetic nervous system again. But I guess it depends what your goal is at that time. So if you want to be alert after your meal, I personally would go for a walk right away. And now if I want to get a little bit sleepy, like in the evening, then I'd probably not go for the walk right away. But yeah, anyway, so just so much for that. And while food should always be the foundation, certain supplements could provide targeted support for gut healing. So, for instance, magnesium. Dominic Cusa called this absolutely essential for gut health. Different forms have different purposes. So, for instance, magnesium glycinate is best for sleep and relaxation, whereas magnesium citrate is most associated for being helpful for releasing con or relieving constipation. It, however, shouldn't be used long term. So more kind of like on an as-needed basis. Magnesium malate is more for like overall energy and threonate. Also more for like sleep and recovery. So it could be worth getting a blend or a complex. But also having like a citrate at hand for when you are a little bit more constipated or when you're traveling. On average, we would recommend for most people like 300 to 400 milligrams daily. Digestive enzymes can help. If you're experiencing bloating, gas, or feeling like food sits in your stomach for too long, you could also just include foods that have or that contain digestive enzymes like papaya, for instance, or pineapple or something like that. Now, probiotics, that's a bit of a tricky topic because most brands or most probiotic supplements that you get are not going to be targeted for you. Like, you don't really know what strains of bacteria you're missing unless you have a specific gut test or you're working with a coach. So I'm always cautious just recommending probiotics point blank. However, if you know what gut bacteria you're missing, what strains, then this could be something to work with. But of course we need to make sure we're also consuming prebiotics in order to feed those bacteria. So there's no point of supplementing probiotics if you then don't consume the right kinds and amounts of fiber also. Other things could be L-glutamine, which supports gut lining integrity. Trey Ruffy recommends 10 grams morning and 10 grams evening for a few months if you have a leaky gut or something like that. That would be something to try out. Another recommendation would be colostrum. Dominic Cusa prefers this over glutamine, for instance, for its multifaceted benefits. It supports gut lining, modulates immune system, balances the microbiome, and contains lactoferrin for iron regulation. Another thing that's often used is apple cider vinegar, which can help stimulate stomach acid production. So you could get into the habit of starting your day with a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in kind of warm water in the morning or even before meals. That would be a recommendation. Another a sub potential supplement would be betaine HC. L for those with confirmed low stomach acid only. That's not something I would just generally say. So it should be used under a practitioner guidance, and it's not appropriate for people with things like heartburn or gastritis or even or ulcers. Trey Ruffy emphasized that we want to make sure we're choosing supplements that are multifaceted rather than a single purpose. For instance, colostrum provides multiple benefits rather than just addressing one issue. I don't want to say I come from the other end of the spectrum, but I prefer to just target one symptom with one supplement as opposed to, let's just say, something really broad like an AG1 or whatever, where it contains 50 different things and is supposed to have 50 different benefits, but we don't really know what exactly it does for what. So that's just sort of my approach. Now let's look at other things we can do to optimize our gut health. Since stress is such a major factor in gut health, developing effective stress management strategies is absolutely crucial. Something you could do to manage your daily stress a little bit better would be breathing exercises. We could try something like box breathing, so four counts in, holding for four counts out, holding for four counts, and then doing that again, or doing something like the physiological sigh. So that's a very deep breath in through your nose until you feel like you can't breathe in anymore, but then you breathe in one more time to really fill up those alveoli, the little branches in your lungs, and then you have a deep exhale through your mouth. That's called the physiological sigh. Doing that 3 to 5 times can be really activating for your rest and digest system. You could also practice or include a meditation practice and just generally practice mindfulness more throughout the day. So literally for me, what mindfulness just means is more single tasking and less multitasking, more presence and less thinking about the future or the past. So even 5 minutes daily can make a big difference. And you will notice that you get less reactive and things start bothering you less. That's really the benefit from that. And it's not something that happens immediately. That happens after a few months of doing that continuously. Another thing to help fight stress, and this is, these are not really like, whoa, I never heard of this kind of practices, but nonetheless, most people don't practice them on a regular basis, so that's why I'm including them in here. And that will be like the next point I wanted to make is nature exposure. Spending time outdoors daily, even if it's just 5 to 10 minutes, and regardless of the weather, is so helpful for our for our psyche, for our body, for literally everything. So we could also do some creative activities that help with down regulation. For example, coloring books, puzzles, crafting, playing with your pets, or even just like reading for pleasure, not for learning. Those are all things that help us like switch off from our day-to-day stressors. In order to manage chronic stress, that's a little bit different. We really need to identify stress triggers, and learning to set boundaries more and more, learning to say no, limiting news, social media exposure and consumption. We need to work on improving sleep quality and quantity. Just focusing more on cultivating those social connections and support that help nourish us and help us feel like we can handle what we've got on our plate. So when it comes to nervous system regulation, Dane Anderson emphasized that we really want to support our parasympathetic nervous system through the vagus nerve stimulation. That could include things like hot and cold exposure, humming, deep breathing, again, restorative practices like yoga, massages, warm baths, and so on. It really is very person dependent on that field here. Now we want to look at the relationship between exercise and gut health, which is quite complex. While movement is absolutely beneficial, the type and the intensity matter significantly. Of course, walking is kind of more like a gentle movement. It is proven over and over to support digestion. We could aim for something like 8 to 10,000 steps daily, and splitting them up between I'm gonna go for a short walk after every single meal. You could, yoga stimulates a lot of the digestive system as well, especially through like twists and contortions. But even just the restorative aspect of it or the relaxing aspect of it can also definitely help. We, of course, want to include some strength training at least 3 times per week, but not always training to failure, especially not if we're currently experiencing gut health issues. We should consider when we're looking at exercise a few things when it comes to the gut. So, for instance, Trey Brophy emphasized that during active gut healing, exercise intensity often needs to be reduced just because the whole body is so inflamed. So, if we're like used to working out 6 times per week, and on top of that, some high intensity, and during the day, we're also just switched on, switched on, switched on, we should definitely dial it back, whether that pertains to the overall volume or intensity or both. So signs you may need to reduce exercise intensity or volume or both include digestive systems or symptoms worsening after workouts, increased fatigue throughout the day, sleep disturbances, or just overall increased anxiety as well. A modified approach could include reducing training frequency, lowering the intensity, so kind of like leaving always 2 to 3 reps in reserve, shorter sessions, more emphasis on walking and yoga or things like that, and just prioritizing those down regulatory activities. We want to remember that exercise is a stressor for the body, which is good, but when your gut is already inflamed or compromised, adding more stress through intense exercise can hinder healing. So, based on all the expert insights, here is kind of a comprehensive approach to healing your gut. You want to start with phase one, with foundations. And on average, that might take 1 to 4 weeks. So, looking at nutrition, that could mean for a while completely eliminating obvious irritants like processed foods, excess sugar, and alcohol, increasing water intake gradually, adding 5 to 7 grams of fiber every few days, and including more fermented foods and focusing on anti-inflammatory foods. And when it comes to lifestyle in those first few weeks, we want to really establish a consistent sleep routine and practice eating hygiene. So sitting down, chewing well, breathing before meals, beginning our daily stress management practices, whatever that might mean for you, reducing exercise intensity if necessary, and just including or making sure we're getting our walks in. Now, we can also start a supplement regime, whatever is needed at the time. Magnesium probably for most people, or things like digestive enzymes if appropriate. The second phase, we could refer to that as the building phase. That would be weeks 5 to 12 approximately. So here we want to focus on increasing our plant diversity, working towards those 30 plus different plants per week. And we could add more gut healing foods like bone broth and colostrum. We could consider more targeted elimination if necessary, like when it comes to those whole foods. And as it pertains to lifestyle practices, we want to deepen our stress management practices, optimizing our sleep environment and routine, and gradually increasing movement again as tolerated, but addressing chronic stressors wherever possible. If we need, this will be the place to add more targeted supplements like L-glutamine, zinc for some people as well, or for most people probably, and considering additional testing if the symptoms continue to persist. And then following that up with something phase number three, an optimization phase. So let's just say roughly weeks 13 and beyond. Here we can reintroduce some of the eliminated foods systematically, but in small doses, probably. So, maybe having a glass of wine once a week, or including a little bit of dark chocolate again, or a high quality bread or something like that. We do want to focus, though, on maintaining that diversity of of foods that we consume and listening to our body's responses. So, like, okay, if I'm reintroducing one thing, I'm just reintroducing one thing at a time, and then monitoring my body, my symptoms for the next 48 hours or so to make sure this is not causing anything, and then reintroducing the next food. So, kind of developing sustainable long-term eating patterns that way. And when it comes to the lifestyle practices, we want to maintain our stress management practices, maybe deepening them in terms of duration or looking at different ones. If I'm saying, like, oh, I really don't like this form of meditation, maybe I can find a different form of meditation where I'm going to journal instead, or whatever it might be. And returning to our preferred exercise routine as appropriate. For many people, that could mean long term, not going back to those, whatever, 6 days of training or so, but instead just keeping it at four and, making that the long term strategy. We want to continue to prioritize sleep and recovery, and of course, building community and support in all kinds of ways. For the supplements, we need to adjust that on a regular basis. Just depending on excuse me, depending on what the body needs at the time. Long term, there are some things we don't want to take consistently and rather like in a cycled way. But yeah, just that needs to be addressed on an individual basis. So now let me address some of the common challenges you might face with this. Let's just say if you're feeling, oh, I'm doing everything right, but I'm still not seeing results. That is super frustrating, but also quite common. And here we want to consider, are we actually being consistent with all the practices that we're doing? Because sometimes we just look at our weeks in terms of like Monday through Friday. Or we're consistent for like 2 weeks and we're like, oh, I'm not seeing results. So gut healing takes time. Are there hidden stressors you haven't addressed? Sometimes, again, like we don't feel that we're that stressed because we've just become so accustomed to it. But in the end, there's still so much going on. So yeah, we might need professional testing in some cases to identify specific issues, but I would just say, let's focus on consistency. Let's look at all areas of life and not try to do too much. Like in most cases, it comes down to doing less, to cutting out more stuff than it is to like adding more supplements and, more different practices. Another common thing is I feel worse when I add fiber. That often indicates that you're either increasing fiber too quickly, or maybe you have SIBO or bacterial overgrowth, or you might just have the wrong quantities of something or the wrong form of something. So let's just say if you're eating raw broccoli, that's super, 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 super difficult to digest. So even just cooking it could make a big difference. Or if you're cooking your broccoli, but you're having, I don't know, like 300 grams of it because you just want to feel full. That is also a very high risk of causing bloating, or so very few people that I know would be able to tolerate that without feeling bloated afterwards. So assess your quantities and the way in which you're eating certain foods. Another thing is, oh, I can't stick with this long term. It feels too restrictive. And yeah, I mean, often it is about the approach rather than the willpower. So here I would just say, let's make smaller changes and focus on one area at a time, as opposed to trying too much too soon. Especially like we kind of want to roll this up from the ground up. So addressing stress and sleep, which inevitably affect willpower, and maybe getting an accountability partner, a coach, or even just a friend to do all this with, because yeah, it needs to be something that feels sustainable. And in most cases, it's just that life is overwhelming as it is, so we do need to make those changes kind of small. Another thing that I sometimes hear is my symptoms keep coming back. So that kind of suggests that the root cause hasn't been fully addressed and you may need longer healing time. So like, let's just say if you're eliminating certain foods for 2 to 3 weeks and you're thinking, okay, I'm gradually going to introduce that back again, and your symptoms keep coming back. It doesn't mean that you can't eat that food ever again, because sometimes it might just be that it wasn't enough time for whatever was inflamed to die off, so to speak. So yeah, there might be ongoing triggers you haven't identified, or you're just returning to old patterns too quickly. And again, this is where professional guidance could be quite helpful. So from a long-term perspective, Trey Brophy emphasized something super crucial: healing doesn't always mean killing. Many approaches to gut health focus on eliminating bad bacteria, but the goal should be creating balance and supporting your body's natural healing mechanisms. Gut health isn't a destination that you ever reach and then forget about. It's an ongoing relationship with your body that requires attention and care. The good news is that once you understand the principles and develop sustainable habits, maintaining gut health becomes much easier. So we want to remember that our gut microbiome is constantly changing based on our daily choices. Every meal is an opportunity to feed beneficial bacteria. Every stress management practice supports our gut-brain connection, and every good night's sleep allows our body to repair and regenerate. So, Your gut health is truly the foundation of your overall wellness. As we've seen throughout this comprehensive guide, digestive health impacts everything from your mood and energy levels to your hormone balance, immune function, and ability to maintain healthy weight. The beautiful thing about focusing on gut health is that improvements often happen relatively quickly compared to other health interventions. Many people notice changes in energy, mood, and digestive symptoms within just a few days or weeks of implementing these strategies. Remember the key principles we've covered? So, diversity in plant foods is more important than perfection. Stress management is just as crucial as nutrition. Gradual changes are more sustainable than dramatic overhauls. Your body has an incredible capacity to heal when given the right support, and consistency matters more than intensity. Start where you are. With what you have, you don't need to implement everything at once. Choose one or two strategies that resonate with you and commit to them for a few weeks. Build from there. Your gut health journey is unique to you. What works for someone else might not work exactly the same way for you. Probably doesn't, actually. Listen to your body, be patient with the process, and don't hesitate to seek professional support or even just a friend as an accountability partner. If you found this comprehensive guide helpful at all, please give the podcast a review, the video a thumbs up, and share it with someone who might find it helpful as well. Subscribe to the podcast or the YouTube channel, or follow me on Instagram. I would love that as well. And in the comments, if you're watching this on YouTube, I'd love to hear about your gut health journey. What strategies have or haven't worked for you in the past? What challenges are you facing? Your experiences might also help someone else. So please share. And remember, you have more control over your gut health than you might think. With the right knowledge, tools, and consistency, you can absolutely transform not just your digestion, but your overall quality of life. I hope that your gut health journey that you continue your gut health journey, and that you don't give up on something where you just kind of have settled for it being the normal. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I really appreciate you taking the time to tune in, and I wish you all a wonderful rest of your day.